Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Gift of Grace on the Word 1220. This is Phil Giuliani here again on another awesome Sunday night. And this is the Gift of Grace, where we read and teach God's Word. We proclaim the kingdom and salvation in Jesus the Messiah. So I hope you've had an awesome week. It's been a week already since Resurrection Day, since Easter Sunday. And last week, the program was about the resurrection account that is in Luke's Gospel in chapter 24. Tonight, we're going to continue with that because we're going to look over the passage that's commonly called the Road to Emmaus. And this is just really an awesome passage, and it really shows, well, it shows a handful of things that we'll discuss as we go along. And we're going to start, I'll give you a chance to get to Luke 24 as you flip to it or click on it or whatever you have to do. But this passage starts in verse 13, which comes immediately after the passage about Peter running to the tomb and stooping down and seeing the linen cloths. But let's start in 13. Now behold, two of them, meaning the disciples, two of them were traveling that same day to a village called Emmaus, which was 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they talked together of all the things which had happened. So it was, while they conversed and reasoned, that Jesus himself drew near and went with them. But their eyes were restrained, so they did not know him. And he said to them, "What kind of conversation is this that you have with one another as you walk and are sad?" Then the one whose name was Cleopas answered and said to him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem, and have you not known the things which have happened there in these days?" And he said to them, "What things?" So they said to him, "The things concerning Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, today is the third day since these things happened. Yes, and certain women of our company, who arrived at the tomb early, astonished us. When they did not find his body, they came saying that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. And certain of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the woman had said, but he they did not see. Then he said to them, "O foolish ones, and how slow of heart to believe in all that the prophets have spoken. Ought not the Christ to have suffered these things in order to enter into his glory?" And beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he expounded to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. We're going to pause there because this is kind of the first chunk of material that we're going to take in this passage that's commonly called the Road to Emmaus. So these two guys, we know Cleopas. We don't know who the other one was. And there's so many people named Cleopas, and there's so many people named Mary in all these accounts that it's hard to know who's who. But Cleopas apparently is, one indication is he's married to the Virgin Mary's sister, but that's not clear from this passage. But anyway, we're going to have to deal with that some other time. Maybe when we're in heaven, we'll figure that out. But anyway. So these two men had left the others. So, you know, Zechariah 13, verse 7 says, if you strike the shepherd and the sheep will scatter. So these two sheep were already dispersing. Now, you remember that Passover was a pilgrimage feast, and so every man had to go to Jerusalem for the Passover, and presumably his family would go along. And now the pilgrimage feast was over, because now that was the night of the Feast of First Fruits, which was the day of the resurrection, We don't know if this was before sundown or after sundown, but in any event, these two guys were heading back to Emmaus where they lived. And it, the gospel points out it's a 7-mile walk. And because it indicates in the passage when Jesus comes that they're sad, you get the impression that these two men were exhausted, they were confused, they were kind of trudging along, heavy steps. You know, you can tell a lot about what's going on with someone by their gait, how they walk. So, for example, when ancient cities had walls around them and there were watchmen on the walls and they saw someone coming, a messenger coming, they could usually tell by how he walked if he had good news or bad news, if he had a warning, if he was coming with some kind of happy report, whatever it was, they could usually tell by how he was walking. So these guys are confused and they're tired and they're kind of trudging along. And it indicates in the passage the reason that they're sad. And that revolved around what their concept of the Messiah was. They actually point out to Jesus, not knowing that it's him, that they thought this was the one who was going to redeem Israel. This was going to be the one, they thought Jesus was the one who was going to restore the kingdom of David and Solomon. He was going to be the one that was going to get rid of the Romans, get rid of the other Gentiles, get rid of all these pagan influences in the land, and get back to the golden age that they had during the kings David and Solomon. So what had happened to Jesus was not exactly their concept about Messiah. And you can kind of see this if you study the Tanakh, the Old Testament, as you read through Torah, and as you read through the prophets, two very interesting concepts show themselves. One is a suffering, sacrificing Messiah. And this is what is foretold in Torah with all the blood sacrifices and how blood is always shed because there's always sin. And because there is sin, there has to be blood shed. There's no forgiveness of sin without blood being shed. And you have this suffering. Isaiah 52 and 53 are good examples of this, but it is very evident through many of the Psalms. And if you want to read Psalm 22 for your homework, that's a good one to read. And I think if you go to my YouTube channel, which is One in Messiah, Gift of Grace Ministries, One in Messiah, Gift of Grace Ministries, search for that on YouTube. I did a much more extensive teaching on Psalm 22 just before Good Friday, because it is a psalm about a horrible suffering that's going on. And as you know, Isaiah 52 and 53 also portray that. But throughout the Tanakh, especially in the prophets, there was also a picture of a powerful king, a Messiah who would come and unite the people, destroy enemies, come with power. And this, of course, was what most people focused on. People like a leader who is powerful. People like a leader who gets rid of enemies. People like a leader that provides for security and safety. And so this was by far the more common of the two that people latched on to. Nobody wants to think about suffering messiahs. Everybody wants to think about triumphant messiahs. We have a parallel about that in our time. No one wants to talk about crosses and blood and sin. Everybody wants to talk about God is love and everything is wonderful and it doesn't matter who you are or what you do. Everything will be okay in the end because we like to latch on to an explanation that makes us feel good, that rationalizes in our mind that I'm actually very good. I'm actually a very good person. Many of the ancient rabbis came to the conclusion there would be two messiahs, a suffering servant, a suffering messiah, and a triumphant messiah. Well, they were right, of course, not in the fact that there would be two messiahs, but the fact that these attributes of messiah would come in two different comings. The same person, the same God-man, who came as a suffering messiah, a lamb who was slain. The book of Revelation paints an amazing picture of a lamb that looked like it had been slain, followed by a triumphant king who rides in on a white horse, the same messiah, not two messiahs, same person in two different comings. When he comes back, which is going to be shortly, he isn't coming as a suffering servant. He's coming on a white horse with a two-edged sword and a rod of iron. But that's subject for a different show. But anyway, their concept was they wanted the king. If you remember, and this is after this story, of course, but Jesus was literally on his way to the ascension, on his way to ascend into heaven, right in front of those guys. He had just given them the Great Commission. And you got to hand it to Peter, after everything that happens, after the talk they had in John 21, all these interesting things that Jesus had told him, he still doesn't get it. And as they're literally walking up the Mount of Olives, he says to Jesus, "Are you going to restore the kingdom to Israel now?" In other words, is this the time that you're going to triumph over all these Gentiles? Or is this the time that we're going to go into the city and take over the government? Well, no, it's not. So this idea of a triumphant Messiah, these guys walking on the road to Emmaus, they're kind of all bummed out about, because they saw Jesus die. They saw him suffer horribly, horribly. As Hank Hanegraaff, the Bible Answer Man, always says, Jesus suffered more than the cumulative suffering of every human being who's ever lived. Why? Well, you know, there were plenty of people executed in brutal ways. There are plenty of people in our time executed in brutal ways. But no one has ever had all the sin of the world placed on their shoulder, literally put on them. As Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians 5:21, he who did not know sin became sin. He became sin so that we might become the righteousness of God in him. No one will ever know what that felt like, the once-for-all sacrifice. No one will ever know. We won't even understand that when we're in heaven. That's why we will be in heaven, but we won't understand how such a thing could have been possible. And it's really kind of summed up on the Good Friday, Unleavened Bread, Resurrection Day, the 3 days, the Triduum, as it's called in many churches. It's all of salvation history gets fulfilled in literally in those 3 days of what happens to Jesus, what happens at the cross, what happens in the tomb, and what happens when he comes out of the tomb. The things to keep in mind, and you know, if you know me, you know I'm going to say, if you don't think about the cross 20 times a day, you don't get what happened there. You don't just think about the cross on Good Friday. Then the rest of the year, you don't think about it. And then you say, oh, well, it's Good Friday, crucifixion. Oh, it's the cross. Yep. You think about it every day, multiple times, because it's the most unbelievable thing that happened in the history of humanity. It's the focal point of everything that happens in salvation history, that the Creator would become the sin bearer so that you don't have to bear your sins, so that you are justified by what he did. And so the creator becomes the sin bearer. Really quite remarkable, especially when they were living in a covenant of law and your righteousness was measured by how well you did with the law. So these guys obviously didn't get this yet. And we wouldn't have either. We still don't get it. The people in our time, including the people in the churches, don't get this. Most people think Jesus was a great philosopher. He was a great teacher. He came to show us how to live. And yes, he did those things. But then when it gets down to, oh, it's so horrible that they killed him, immediately you know that they don't understand what he came for, what he came to do, how he came to fulfill all that came through Torah, through the prophets, through the writings. So back to the road. So these guys are trudging along, and they're also pondering the news that some of these women that were in their company, because they knew these women. These women had come from Galilee to Jerusalem. You know, in our language, we would say, well, they were part of the ministry. Mary Magdalene and Joanna and some of these other women, they also, some of the richer women also helped finance the ministry. So they knew who these women were, and they had this unbelievable report that they went to the tomb. The tomb was empty, and that Jesus had been raised from the dead. He had talked about it. He had told them numerous times that the Son of Man would go to Jerusalem, be handed over to sinful, evil men, would be put to death and rise on the third day. He had told them several times, but as we saw last week, the women didn't remember at the time. Peter and John didn't remember that at the time. But then they remembered. When the angels told Mary Magdalene and the other women, remember he told you, it says, then they remembered. When they went and told Peter and John, Peter and John said, this sounds like a fable. This sounds like a story. They ran to the tomb, and it says, and then they believed. When they looked in the tomb and saw the grave clothes, then they believed. And so these two men are talking about these things. So, of course, Jesus approaches them, and it says that they're prevented from recognizing him. Many people didn't recognize Jesus when they saw him in his glorified body, and that would be kind of worth talking about at some point on one of these shows. But here it specifically says they were prevented from recognizing him. So he did something so that these two men in particular, as they're walking, would not recognize him, didn't know that it was he who was walking with them. And it says he's walking from Jerusalem. He's walking in the same direction that they are. And they probably don't think anything of this right away, because there's plenty of people walking on the road, and there's a lot of people living in the city. Because as I said, now the pilgrimage feast was over. They didn't have to go back to Jerusalem until Pentecost, Shavuot, which would have been roughly another 50 days, 49 days from that day. So after they walked back to Emmaus, they would have had to go back to Jerusalem for Pentecost. For them, it would have been easy. It's about a 7-mile walk, which you can walk 7 miles in a little over 2 hours if you walk at a normal pace. But if you lived in Nazareth, or you lived in Capernaum, or you lived in Tiberias, or you lived in the far north of the country, it was a long journey, 120, 130, 140 miles to Jerusalem. That's a long walk, and it's a slow journey on a donkey. So by the time you got there, you'd be home for, 4 or 5 weeks. Then you'd have to start heading back down. But anyway, he asked them what they're talking about. And it's interesting that they pipe right up and tell him, hey, you know, we're talking about all these things that happened. He knows that they're sad. He says, you know, why are you sad? What are you talking about? He says, well, we're talking about all these things that happened in Jerusalem. He wants them to tell him what they're concerned about, what they're talking about, and kind of what their feelings are about all of this. And he pretends that he doesn't know. Says, what things? He doesn't know. So they're talking about the things that he went through, and they're telling him that they're thinking about the things that he went through. So they say the things about Jesus of Nazareth, that the chief priests had him crucified. We were hoping that he was this triumphant kingly Messiah. Now it's the third day, and these women have brought this unbelievable report to us, and it's a very confusing time. These people had known him for many years, at least the 3 years of his public ministry. Some of the people from Galilee had known him even longer. But these guys probably knew him for the 3 years of his ministry. So they knew him well. They had faith that he was the Messiah. They may not know exactly what that meant, but they had faith. They probably had heard of Peter's great confession. They had seen miracles, all the healings, food being multiplied, dead being raised. They saw all the miracles. They knew that this corresponded exactly to what the prophet Isaiah said the Messiah would do. They also knew that he spoke in parables, which was exactly what the prophet Isaiah said the Messiah would do, that he would teach in parables. These guys went every Shabbat to the synagogue. They read the scriptures. They wouldn't have had scriptures at home. Nobody would have had scriptures at home. Most synagogues probably didn't even have all the scripture because it was a very expensive ordeal to have all the scrolls. But they knew the readings. They knew what Isaiah had said. But yet, when he was killed, when they saw him being put in the tomb, they were shocked that all of a sudden in their mind, this whole process was now over. Because now he was dead. Now he was buried. And after he had told them numerous times that he would rise on the third day, they couldn't quite believe this. So they were really no different than the women or Peter and John. So they were talking about this bitter suffering that had gone on, this horrible past 4 days, all these horrible things that had happened. And they don't know this is Jesus they're telling this to. But he doesn't join in that conversation in the sense of he doesn't say, yes, oh, it was, you have no idea how horrible it was. You have no idea the pain and the suffering. You have no idea of the physical anguish, the mental anguish. Yes, it was absolutely horrible. No, he doesn't even mention that because the suffering's now behind him. The suffering is now behind him. Now there's joy set before him. As Isaiah talks about, as the Psalms talk about, if he's obedient to this, there's joy set before him, and he'll see his descendants in a long line. Not his physical descendants, but his spiritual descendants, who are us. So that joy is set before him. They didn't understand this kind of redemption. They didn't understand this kind of a Messiah. And because this is happening in real time, and the suffering had just been a couple of days before this, 3 days before this, it was very difficult for them to come to an understanding of what this was simply by going over the events of the days. Oh, I know the music's already playing. It looks like there's going to be part two of The Road to Emmaus. Well, thanks for tuning in, and join us next week on The Gift of Grace, where we're going to finish Luke 24. Have an awesome week.